News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Michael Cohen is likening his former boss to a mobster, AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Cohen says Donald Trump demanded blind loyalty, and some, like Cohen, stupidly gave it.
I regret the day I said yes to Mr. Trump.
Saying Trump insisted they lie on his behalf, even if it meant breaking the law, without actually issuing the order.
He speaks in a code, and I understand the code because I've been around him for a decade.
How many times did Mr. Trump asked you to threaten an individual or entity on his behalf?
Cohen told Congresswoman Jackie Speier quite a few.
50 times?
More.
100 times?
More.
200 times?
More.
500 times?
Probably.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
And President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un hold one-on-one talks. AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
At the start of the second day of their nuclear summit in Hanoi, President Trump praised North Korea's Kim Jong-un and their talks.
There are a lot of great ideas being thrown about. I think very importantly, the relationship is, you know, just very strong. And when you have a good relationship, a lot of good things happen.
Trump also said he's in no rush to make the right deal. Kim noted that the whole world was watching, suggesting that for some, the image of the two sitting side by side must resemble a fantasy movie. I'm Tim McGuire.
The democratically controlled House of Representatives passed a new measure expanding background checks to include gun shows and internet sales. Their intent Thursday is to push a bill to conduct a background check for just a few minutes, and some cases to at least 10 days. Two bills are likely to face stronger opposition in the Republican-controlled Senate, where opponents say it will do nothing from stopping a criminal from getting a weapon. President Trump has said that he supports expanding background checks for gun buyers, but the White House says his advisors would recommend a veto, claiming the bill would infringe on Second Amendment rights. This is VOA News. White House senior advisor Jared Kushner met Tuesday with the Saudi Crown Prince, first time they've met since the October killing of U.S.-based Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. The White House said in a statement the two discussed a variety of topics in Riyadh, including economic investment in the Middle East and efforts to bring peace to the region. Kushner, President Donald Trump's son-in-law, is on a seven-day trip to the Middle East, visiting U.S.-allied Gulf Arab states along the U.S. Middle East envoy, or with Middle East envoy Jason Greenblatt, and U.S. Special Representative for Iran, Brian Hook. Rivals India and Pakistan both have claims and counterclaims of shooting down the other's fighter jets. Pakistan said it downed two Indian planes after they crossed over to its side of the line of control, which is the de facto border in the disputed Kashmir area, followed by releasing pictures of the wreckage and video of the pilot. India called the release of the video and some leaked other videos on social media a violation of the Geneva Convention outlining the international rules of warfare. India also said it shot down a Pakistani fighter plane, a claim denied by Islamabad. Tension in the region has been steadily growing since a suicide attack earlier this month in Indian Kashmir that killed more than 40 security personnel. India accused Pakistan of sheltering the militant group that claimed the attack and promised a befitting response. The United States and a number of other nations walked out of the United Nations Conference of Disarmament in Geneva, Switzerland, Wednesday, as a representative of Venezuela's embattled President Nicolas Maduro got ready to speak. The U.S. ambassador to the event, Robert Wood, told reporters the walkout was meant to indicate that Maduro's government has no moral and political legitimacy. A Coast Guard officer accused of being a white supremacist has been indicted. We get more from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
A U.S. Coast Guard officer who worked at Coast Guard headquarters in Washington has been indicted by a federal grand jury on drug and firearms charges. 49-year-old Christopher Paul Hassan has been in federal custody since February 15th. The indictment includes charges of illegal possession of firearms by a drug addict and unlawful user and illegal possession of firearm silencers. According to prosecutors, investigators found 15 firearms, including 7 rifles and over 1,000 rounds of ammunition in a search of Hassan's apartment in Silver Spring, Maryland. In a court filing, prosecutors said Hassan has espoused extremist views for years. Mike Gracia, Washington.
And find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Buhari wins re-election, but opposition candidate Atiku Abubakar will challenge the results in court.
The result is not accepted because the will of the people was kind of changed in favor of General Muhammad Buhari. So as of tomorrow and next, our party will be going to court to challenge that.
Harold Molokwo is the chairman of Atiku Abubakar's PDP USA chapter. Thousands of Nigerian refugees flee Boko Haram violence to Cameroon. There are new corruption convictions in Sierra Leone, Uganda to repatriate dozens of former M23 rebels to DRC, and Sudan tightens emergency rule as protests grow.
Freedom is not something challengeable. When we're told not to do something, we do it. This is why the protesters are getting bigger.
A protester in Sudan's capital, Khartoum, and a visiting UN official is concerned about Zimbabwe's treatment of protesters. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's opposition candidate and former Vice President Atiku Abubakar says he will challenge in court the results of that country's February presidential election. The Independent National Elections Commission, INEC, announced early Wednesday that incumbent Muhammadu Buhari won the ruling All Progressive People's Party, received 15 million votes compared to 11 million for Abubakar of the People's Democratic Party. But Abubakar said the election was marred by malpractices in many states. Harold Molokwo is the chairman of PDP USA chapter. He says Abubakar won the election and that the results do not reflect the will of the Nigerian people.
The result is not accepted because the will of the people was kind of changed. We have the real results that came from each polling booth, certified by both the opposition party and the current government, with help of the police and military, intimidation and killing people all over Nigerians. The INEC collaborated to change the result in favor of General Muhammad Buhari. So the party, with all those informations, and due to the fight the PDP has fought for many years for democracy, cannot accept anything that would take us back to a military era. So as of today, and tomorrow and next, our party will be going to court to challenge that. And a mass of Nigeria will soon be pouring on the street to show solidarity that that was not an election. There's no even joyful on the opposition party, the APC also. Everybody's kind of moody because everybody knows that the result was not a reflection of the masses.
What do you point to say that the election was not a reflection of the people?
The people voted in support of Dr. Abubakar Atiku, who represents the People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and the present administration under General Buhari. APC rigged the election. They changed the number to favor him with collaboration of military and the INEC. So in that case, the real result was Abubakar Atiku that was elected to be president, but they used their incumbent's power to change it. So Abubakar cannot call him to accept that because it's not the will of the people. And as of today, nobody's celebrating that in Nigeria. That shows you that he didn't win nothing. Nobody's happy. Abubakar will not call him because the party is strongly behind him, but this election is not the true will of the people. They rigged the election.
So would the PDP like for the Independent National Elections Commission to call for a revote or a recount?
What they are saying is that the INEC should abide by the real result that came from each polling booth that was signed by all the agents present when they counted it, because the law of INEC is that once the election is completed in each ward or polling booths, all the agents of the parties will sign the result sheet before they transmit it. The People's Democratic Party under Abubakar Atiku have all those original copies signed by everybody, including the agent of the APC, the ruling party. But now the result that came out of there gave Abubakar a very leading number, more than 2 million votes. Now they change it without using that. So what the party is saying is that use the writing, and where those killings happen, they should have what they call, give them opportunity to, you know, conduct a fresh election there. But what is said on the ground today, Abubakar won with over 2.something million votes.
So it's the PDP going to court?
Yes, we are going to court because, you know, we want to follow the normal process. So by Monday, our party will be in court to lay the foundation, and we have evidences We have body camera. We have different pictures to show what actually happened. And we believe our mandate will be back to us in a short period of time.
We do thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Harold Molokwo is the chairman of Nigeria's opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP USA chapter. He was speaking with me from Chicago. The governor of Cameroon's far northern region is denying a report that tens of thousands of Nigerian refugees who fled Boko Haram-related violence will be forced to return home. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the northern town of Limani.
Aid agency Médecins Sans Frontières, also called Doctors Without Borders, said Wednesday that Cameroonian and Nigerian authorities have ordered 40,000 refugees to return to northeastern Nigeria. The statement, reported by the Reuters news agency, said MSF had seen people packing up their belongings and headed toward the Nigerian city of Ran, which Islamist militant group Boko Haram attacked and burned to the ground in January. Miji Yawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, told VOA that any returns to Nigeria are voluntary. He says Cameroon will not want the refugees to settle in unsafe places where they may still be attacked by Boko Haram, and he wants also to state that Cameroon is a state of law and respects its international commitments and will not force any of the refugees to return, but they must seek refuge in safer localities, and that those who agree to voluntarily return will be accompanied back to their country. Some 35,000 Nigerians have crossed into Cameroon over the past 2 months, fleeing attacks by Boko Haram or fighting between the group and government troops. They add to a refugee population in the region that now tops 250,000. Refugee spokesperson Elvis Aseto says many of the refugees are children in need of medical care.
We get a population of over 20,000 children here. We are in need of help. The items that were distributed is now expired, so we are in need of help. If at all we can get other items that we can use, we need the UNHCR for that support, and we are now appealing for the help in the name of the Lord.
Xavier Bourgeois, spokesperson of the UN Refugee Agency in Cameroon, says the agency and its partners have been providing humanitarian aid to the refugees who come in critical condition.
Les besoins sont extrêmement nombreux. Les équipes du HCR.
Bourgeois says because the refugees need urgent assistance, a team of UNHCR staff and its partners, including NGOs, have been paying regular visits to the sites to provide food, water, health and sanitary needs, and to protect and register the Nigerians flooding into Cameroon. He says he is very happy that host communities have been very receptive to the refugees who are either coming for the first time or have been there before. Nigeria has claimed the upper hand in its 10-year fight against Boko Haram, but a total of some 2.5 million people remain displaced across the Lake Chad region, including more than 1.8 million inside Nigeria. UN agencies appealed for $135 million last month to help the displaced. Similar appeals in the past 2 years have been only 42% and 56% funded. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Limani, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, February 28th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone's High Court on Wednesday convicted the former acting head of the law department at Fura Bay College on 2 counts of abuse of office contrary to the country's anti-corruption law. The court ordered Emmanuel E.C. Shears Moses to pay 6 60 million liuns, or about $6,976, by March 13th, or serve a three-year jail term. The court also found guilty and sentenced to 3 years two officials of the Sierra Leone Ministry of Information for misappropriation of funds. Margaret Murray is the public relations officer of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission.
He was charged with two counts of abuse of office whilst he was acting head of department at the Fourier College Law Department between 2015 and 2016. We charged him based on investigations from intel that we had that he submitted grades for one Alimatu Titi George, who initially had not submitted any dissertation at all for her modular system in the university. And also the second count, he was charged on the premises that he inflated grades for a past student of the department called Jamilatu Alicia Sise. He was found guilty on both charges by Justice Miata Samba, and he was fined to pay 30 million leones on each of those counts or serve a three-year jail term. So this is a big win, not only to the ACC, but also to the country as a whole, because this means that now people have a confidence, not only in the ACC, but also in the courts of law.
Mr. Moses was standing trial for academic fraud. Further explain that, and does the commission have that jurisdiction in that direction?
Yes, the fact that it premises on corruption as a whole means, because he's a public officer, the University of Sierra Leone is owned by the country, which means he's a public officer who was appointed to in the role as acting head of department. He misused his office, which is contrary to Section 42, one of the Anti-Corruption Act of 2008.
So what can you tell us also about this Suriba Kamara, the accountant at the Ministry of Information?
Yes, Mr. Suriba Kamara was a former senior accountant at the Ministry of Information and Communication, together with the former acting director of the Ministry of Information and Communication, Mr. Edward King. We also secured a conviction today in the court of law before the judge, Justice Bintu Aladi. They were sentenced to 3 years jail term. They were given the task to popularize and sensitize the general public on the commission of inquiry. They were given 206 million leones to go about the sensitization of this commission of inquiry, and they misappropriated some part of the money that was given to them. And they pleaded guilty, and we have indicted and prosecuted them.
You know, Margaret, just across the border into Liberia, there is also an anti-corruption commission. And I was speaking this week with someone there and asked, why is it that the anti-corruption commission in Sierra Leone is making these gains or successes in its work? Why are you able to do that?
I think because the president is very much serious when it comes to fighting corruption in the country. He has drawn the line against corruption, and in his wisdom, he has put in front Francis Ben Kaifala, who is now the current commissioner, to lead the fight against corruption.
Margaret, thank you very much for talking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you so much.
Margaret Murray is the public relations officer of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. She was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir this week issued four new emergency laws forbidding demonstrations and strikes, as well as imposing new economic restrictions. Namba Mohideen reports from Khartoum on how these measures, which clamp down on social media activity and some financial transactions, are affecting people's daily lives and further fueling dissent.
The new measures come after President Bashir announced a state of emergency on February 22nd, 2 months after demonstrations erupted across the country demanding regime change. His aim, he said, was to rescue Sudan's political and economic situation. Al-Bashir told reporters that the imposing of emergency state is aiming to prepare and reset national political situation and for implementing the required benefits, fulfilling the nation's ambitions and dreams. Sudan's constitution enables the president to declare a state of emergency when there are threats to national security, such as a war or natural disaster, says Muhammad Awad, a legal expert and activist. But Awad says he doesn't believe that is the case here. He also believes in the current situation, there is no legal need for imposing the emergency. The solution is 100% political. Peaceful transfer of power is the solution. The emergency measures include restrictions on transactions involving gold and other natural resources, and on money transfers. All of this is raising questions among rights groups and protesters like Muhammad Umar, a student.
Emergency laws has always been practiced on us, and the president is just announcing it. The only difference now is that the authority has the legal cover under the emergency law to do anything, seizing what's left of our freedom.
Social media is one of the few places where demonstrators can organize protests or share information. But even those spaces are being affected by the new restrictions. The new measures mean that offenses like insulting a government official or sharing news that the authorities believe may put the country in danger can bring prison sentences of up to 10 years. The restrictions appear to be making demonstrators like this one on the street in Khartoum even more defiant and fueling calls for al-Bashir, who has ruled Sudan since 1989, to step down.
Freedom is not something challengeable. When we're told not to do something, we do it. This is why the protesters are getting bigger. The president should confess and deliver the power not to make new rules to gain time.
Despite the government restrictions, new protests broke out Wednesday at the Ahfad University for Women in Omdurman and in a hospital in Khartoum's Bahri section, where a child died after being hit by a security car. Police pushed back the protests at the university and broke up the one at the hospital. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Uganda this week handed over dozens of former Democratic Republic of Congo rebels to the Kinshasa government. About 70 ex-M23 combatants and their dependents will be repatriated back to their country. A top Congolese government official says the move is in fulfillment of President Felix Tshisekedi's determination that all Congolese should contribute to nation building. Mugumi Davis Rakeringi reports from Kampala.
DR Congo Ambassador to Uganda, Jean-Pierre Masala, received former rebels on behalf of his country. He said the former rebels, too, have a role in rebuilding their nation.
I want to take thanks the government of my country with the president, Félix Antoine Tshisekedi. Because you remember in the first speech he did to the nation, he said he wants all Congolese people, bad or good men, abroad to go back home, to join to him, to build the country.
The M23 were former members of a minority Tutsi militia that operated in the Congolese northern Kivu province. The fighting forced more than 140,000 people to flee their homes, according to the UN. International rights groups accused M23 fighters for widespread war crimes, including summer executions, rapes, and forced recruitment of children. Ambassador Masala said the ex-fighters are now ready for integration into their communities. He said he expects other former rebels to follow suit.
So those people that accept themselves voluntarily to go back home, this is a good sign. And to this is, we want to tell the one remaining in the camp to make the decision now to come to their country.
Speaking in Swahili language, Janvier Amani, a former fighter, said he's glad to be returning back home, now a changed man.
I'm going back home to work for my country. I will work towards keeping security and defending my country's sovereignty. However, much Uganda has been good to me. I'm not Ugandan, so I want to go back home because I want to work for my country.
Robert Masolo, an official from Uganda's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, said the repatriation came as a result of regional meetings and accords.
Addis Ababa agreement was followed by another meeting in Congo Brazzaville in October 2017, where again the leaders gave a deadline for these ex-M23 and other ex-combatants who are in the region to return to their countries. This includes FDLR of Rwanda, or sometimes known as Interahamwe, and the ex-M23. So we are fulfilling the decisions of the regional heads of state.
Some more than 300 former fighters have since been repatriated, most of whom have been reportedly been drafted back into the national ranks. For VOA News, I am Ugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The United Nations Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief, Mark Lowcock, is in Zimbabwe to assess the effects of El Nino drought in that country. As Columbus Mavunga reports, the UN official will also visit Malawi, is concerned about how the Zimbabwe government handled protesters in January.
Mark Lowcock, the United Nations Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief, is expected to meet President Emmerson Mnangagwa this Thursday morning and visit some of the drought-affected areas in Zimbabwe, where an estimated 5.3 million people now need assistance as they are food insecure. Lowcock, the head of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, sums up his visit to Zimbabwe and Malawi.
I'm concerned about the suffering of the people in Zimbabwe at the moment because of the economic crisis and the erratic rains and similar problems in Malawi and the humanitarian suffering that's here in Zimbabwe. So we'll be launching our appeal to support people who are suffering most and to try to raise resources from the international community to reduce their suffering. And from the Central Emergency Response Fund, which I manage, we'll be making a contribution. We're trying to work out how best the UN can help working with the local authorities to reduce the suffering of the people.
The UN diplomat said he would want to assess the extent to which the effects of an El Nino drought in the country have affected Zimbabwe's agro-based economy. The British national said he had another reason for visiting Zimbabwe besides the issue of drought and hunger.
I'm keen also to understand more broadly the economic crisis, and I've been hearing about some of the things that happened last month, some of the protests, and want to understand from the government their plans for dealing with that in the right way. So I will be asking the senior officials with me a little bit about all of those things.
In January this year, the world condemned President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government for using army to brutally crush people who were protesting against an over 150% fuel hike. George Sharamba, the spokesman for President Mnangagwa, defended the brutality, saying the state's existence had been challenged. On Wednesday, officials refused to comment on the visit to Zimbabwe by the UN Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief, Mark Lowcock. Columbus Mavunga for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Harare.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigeria's opposition candidate and former vice president, Atiku Abubakar, says he will challenge in court the results of that country's February presidential election. Mr. Abubakar said the election was marred by malpractices in many states. And Sierra Leone's High Court on Wednesday convicted the former acting head of the law department at Furabe College on two counts of abuse of office contrary to the country's anti-corruption law. That is it for this Thursday, February 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey!
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we are celebrating the accomplishments of women on the continent. This year's United Nations theme is Think Equal, Build Smart, Innovate for Change. An in-depth discussion on the path to gender equality on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.